The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good morning, everyone. When Buddhism went to China and Chinese were translating Buddhist texts into Chinese, they did some really wonderful things. And one of the wonderful things was to translate the two core aspects of meditation, two core kind of processes involved in meditation, into the very simple, grounded, ordinary Chinese words for stop and look. Stop and look. And that's their translation of vipassana and samatha, usually translated as concentration and insight and concentration, or insight and tranquility. But this idea of stopping to look, it's so basic. And that sometimes it's really useful in our lives to stop and look at what's going on. And so what I'd like to do today is to stop and look at anger. Anger is a really important human emotion. It's kind of we're kind of wired to become angry, just like we're wired to become afraid and wired to become compassionate and wired in all kinds of ways. And I think it's a task of any human being to become wise about anger, their own anger and the anger around them, to understand it better. And importantly, to learn to stop and look when we're angry. I think it's one of the most useful times to stop and look is when there's anger, as opposed to just acting it out impulsively. And as a society, it seems to me that it's getting to be particularly important for our society to look at, stop and look at anger as well. The amount of anger that's being fueled in our society, our political, our presidential debates, these presidential campaigns these days, is more than I've ever seen in my lifetime. And so, when we've known for a long time that the political strategy has been to elicit fear and anger in people, and anger seems to be particularly strong these days. And so to look at these dynamics, understand it better, I think is important. I think that all societies and maybe all religions have emphasized teachings about keeping anger in check, not to give free rein to anger, to be careful with anger. One of the things that's changed in the modern world, I believe, is an understanding of the harmful effects of suppressing anger and how that can build up a lot of pressure that can kind of spill out in unhealthy ways. So to begin to understand all the dynamics and look deeply inside so that we don't suppress it, but we don't act on it harmfully is a key thing. One of the first things to consider with anger, I think to being careful with the word, is that I think it's useful to look at the word as an umbrella word. It's a very broad kind of category or class of emotions that includes more precise things like, from mild irritation, annoyance, to full-blown rage and wrath. And in between, there's all kinds of other kind of variations of this thing. Now, part of the reason to be careful is that many people are ready to have a manifesto of beliefs, of opinions about anger very quickly, not taking care to realize that anger is a multifaceted phenomena, and to have a simple opinion about anger without looking at the different dimensions of it, I think, it becomes too simplistic or reductionalistic. In Buddhism itself, the word that's often translated into English as anger from Pali literally means hostility. And you get a very different feel for the Buddhist discussions if you understand they're talking about hostility as opposed to anger. Here in the West, there's often idea of justified anger. Often there's an understanding that anger has an important role sometimes. And so people are often very quick to want to defend it. I've seen myself and other Buddhist teachers give talks about anger, and I don't know how often anger is useful to have. Sometimes it's useful, it's appropriate, but I don't know what percentage of times that people are angry it's useful. I haven't done the statistics and the count, but I suspect it's a minority. I suspect it's a small minority. When I was in the Zen monastery, I was the kitchen manager. And the kitchens are, I think, historically places where there's a lot of pressure cooker, you know, commercial or industrial kitchens. And so there was in the monastery kitchen was a hothouse for all kinds of strong feelings. And I was the manager. I had to manage this team of people, and I was a recipient of lots of anger, and I would feel anger and things. So I went to the teacher and said, is it ever appropriate to be angry? And he said, maybe occasionally, but it's rare. So let's just make up a figure. And you can argue this, just make it up. Let's say that 5% of the time that you're angry, it's an appropriate response to the situation. Let's just say 5%, whatever, right? It's appropriate. If a Buddhist teacher gives a talk about anger and the message seems to be don't be angry in any kind of way, so that's more or less the emphasis, they say that anger is not useful, and they talk about working with anger and not being so angry, inevitably people will raise their hand and say, but it's useful, it has an important role. People are so quick to want to defend anger. It's really amazing to me. So I'm going to be very careful today. but I want to say in the outset that there is, with whatever this broad category thing is, anger is, there are times when it's appropriate. It's a strong emotional response that sometimes is appropriate, a way of protecting ourselves or protecting things. And it's inappropriate when I think it contains hostility. Hostility is harmful to the person who's hostile, and I think hostility is harmful to the people it's directed towards. So being able to distinguish between when it's useful and when it's not useful has a lot to do with whether there's hostility in it or not, to recognize what's there. So to stop and look at anger, I'd like to suggest that there are three different areas of anger that we can look at to understand what it is, what's going on. Thinking about this, I made up an acronym, thinking maybe acronyms might help people to remember. So the acronym is AIR, A-I-R. It's kind of nice because when people have a lot of anger, they talk about having hot air. Or sometimes a lot of pressure, pressurized air. Air gets all pressurized. So the first is to look at the assessment that's involved. I'll explain these things in a minute. The second is to look at the impact that the situation has, the anger has. And the third is the response. The response that we want to make to the situation that elicited the anger. So the assessment is an interesting one. So yesterday I got in my car to drive down here, and there was the most humongous bird poop smack in the middle of the the driver's side of the windshield. I mean, I sit down in the car, like it's like front and center. I must have seen bigger splashes on the cars before, but I couldn't remember. This was like big. And I was, a kaleidoscope of emotions came through. There was a slight annoyance, I have to deal with this. Slight humor and amusement. Maybe a teeny little flitted through of maybe kind of a little bit anxiety and something like, what are the neighbors going to think of me driving around in a car with poop on it? Just all kinds of little things flitted through. Now, I've seen, it never happened to me, but I've seen cars that where people have thrown eggs at them. And they looked very similar to what I saw here on my windshield. And when someone throws an egg on your car, usually the emotional response is very different than just bird poop. There's indignation, there's self-righteousness, there's often a sense of blame that's directed. I mean, I could blame the bird, but, you know, I'm going to find that bird. You know, and you know, not particularly if, you know, it doesn't elicit neighborhood fear. Now I'm afraid of the bird. Like, well, but if the egg hit my car, it elicits a lot stronger emotions and feelings. Wrath, maybe, indignation, maybe strong fear. Who's my neighbors? And, you know, now I feel cautious around everyone around. And all kinds of things happen. And so that, and with that could come anger. That anger might have with hostility in it. Anger might just be a sense of very strong, aroused annoyance. This is wrong and something. But the... what I'm hoping to do in that example is to point out that there's a simple assessment that goes on in those two situations. I recognize it as bird poop. I assess it a certain way. If I had somehow misassessed it, misdiagnosed the situation, so that's an egg someone threw in my, I would have evaluated in a very different way. And in that evaluation, I would have had a different response. The anger that we have often goes through an internal assessment that happens very fast sometimes, so fast we don't even know we're doing it. It's just the truth that goes on. But it goes through here. So I'll kind of paraphrase a quote that I think is very provocative. And you don't have to agree with it 100%. Remember the 5% times, so maybe it's true enough times it's a useful quote to take into account before you protest. The paraphrase is something like this, that an only thing that an enemy can harm is your physical body. To harm your mind, you have to cooperate. You have to get involved in it. You have to react. And so, you know, someone can tell you something about, you know, men who wear blue shirts are crummy. And I'm wearing a blue shirt, so I can say that, maybe. I'm sorry for those of you in blue. So I can say that, and my chances are that most of you who are wearing blue shirts, you know, like especially since I'm wearing one, you know, just like... just shrug your shoulders, and I guess maybe this is Gil's making a silly, you know, teaching point. You know, let's get on with the point. And, you know, it doesn't really have an impact on you. Just, you know. But I could say something else about you. And you would probably get aroused and angry. And how could you say that? In that anger, you know, you might feel contracted, you might feel hot, you might... your heart rate might go up, your pulse might go up, your adrenaline gets activated, the fight and flight stimulus is, you know, in full gear, and it's kind of stressful. It's a stressful thing on the system. So why in one situation, you know, just I say something, it just goes right through and nothing, and the other situation, the whole... big, all the system gets geared up. So what's the assessment? What assessment are you making? How are you looking at the situation? How are you evaluating and interpreting the situation? So there's a number of many different things to assess, but a very useful one is to assess what is the emotional precursor for the anger. Often anger is a step-by-step kind of process that involves an emotional precursor or something like that. And I find it very helpful to look and see, do I feel afraid? When something's happened, does it cause fear? And I have that, sometimes anger arises as a reaction, a response to fear. do I feel hurt? And sometimes anger is a response to feeling hurt. Or do I feel threatened? And sometimes anger is a response to feeling a threat. So, and I find that when I have a really good bout of anger going, one of the most useful things I've learned to do is, for myself, is to go for a walk. And I just love walking, you know, just go for a walk. And it's a way of kind of being with the anger, allowing it to be there, and allowing it to course through me. I don't try to inhibit it. I don't try to, you know, say that it's wrong to have it. I just give it, I find going for a good walk is a good place to give unhindered freedom to the anger, just the feelings, the emotions, the energy in the body. Sometimes I walk fast. It seems to hold it better. And just let my mind kind of think what it wants to think, but gently move my mind to try to keep asking the question, you know, what is this coming out of? What is this arising out of? What is this trigger in me? What's going on there? And I'll walk until I see if one of those three things were triggered in me. It was fear, hurt, or a sense of threat. And threat often comes with fear, you know, fear of something that bad's going to happen. Once I discover one of those three that are there, then I'll stop my walk. and often, you know, in my adult life, it's often and then it's time to have a conversation with someone. And then I find the conversations are so much more open to possibilities, so much more cooperatively done. If I go back to the person and say, "When you said X, I felt hurt. When you said Y, I got scared. Now I feel scared. What's going on?" And because most people are willing to have a different kind of conversation, if you say "I felt hurt," than if you say, "You screwed up. You know, you're bad," because then they're defended. They're kind of being threatened. And so so this assessment thing: what's going on for me? What's happening here? I find this very, very important to do. It takes a while sometimes to get under the surface of anger to see what's going on. The big aha moment for me in my life, where I kind of began seeing this, was over 20 years ago. I was living up on Skyline, and I would go home at night, and inevitably someone had their high beams on, in this dark, you know, mountain road up there, and I'd be angry. So I got curious. Stop and look, right? Get curious. That's kind of the hallmark of insight practice, mindfulness. Get curious. So whatever's going on, what's going on? Look more carefully. What's it? What is this? So I got curious about this anger. And I had enough occurrences. It happened over and over again. And so, and then one day, because I was training myself to look at it, one day I saw there was a flash just before I got angry at the other driver. And that flash that went through was fear. Because I was driving, you know, it's dangerous, you know, to be blinded. And once I saw that flash, then I stopped being angry in future high beams. Then I stayed with the fear and then tried to figure out how to drive more cautiously and carefully. That I didn't do if I got angry. Isn't it nice? Oh, that was nice. So then I kind of learned to kind of look more deeply at it. An assessment that can be related to this is, what's your need? Do you have is an underlying need that's being touched, triggered, that comes into play in a situation where you feel angry? And certainly the need for safety, the need for respect, need for integrity are all pieces of it. Need for security. We have needs, but some of the things that are the need, we think is a need, maybe isn't a need. So, for example, maybe what's being threatened is our unnecessary self-aggrandizement. We might have, you know, certain ideas of who we're supposed to be, who we have to be, and that's when that gets threatened, we can get angry. So, if I think that really hotshot Dharma teachers wear blue shirts, and one of you say, you know, Dharma teachers who wear blue shirts are kind of crummy. My poor, you know, my poor self-image is threatened. So with that kind of threat, I could then, you know, I can get really riled up and get angry, and I'll tell you something. I'll tell you where the real Dharma shirts are. So because my self-image that I have is threatened. But I use that as an example because I hope you understand that's a completely ridiculous example. My whole sense of self is tied up with the color of my shirt, you know, and all that. So that happens a lot in our society, that we have a variety of self-images we build up about ourselves, how we want to present ourselves to the world, status that we want to have, power we want to have over other people, different things. And so when that gets threatened sometimes, so to look underneath, what's the need? And is the need a healthy need? The need for to be a, you know, hotshot Dharma teacher is not a healthy need. So what's going on underneath? So this is all the assessment. Now this takes time. So in some situations we don't have time. Things happen so quickly. But to learn to stop and look, stop and reflect. And a wise, mindful life includes the capacity to reflect and contemplate and think about what's going on. So I do that sometimes with my anger when I go for walks. Some people use it other times. I think it's a way of being very respectful of the whole experience of anger. So stop and evaluate it, look at it, think about it, journal about it, talk to friends about it. And it takes a while to get the hang of it and to learn about it. You can't just expect, you know, you can, in one moment, you suddenly become wise about it. It's a whole ecology. Anger is tied to a whole inner psychological and also social ecology that can be very complex. And so if you want to become wise and personally and socially about this, we want to take time to explore and get to know it and assess it. So the second area is the impact of the situation that causes the anger, the impact on us ourselves, or the impact of our reactivity to the situation. Remember, if anger goes through an assessment, then that assessment is part of the impact the event has happened in us. So what's the impact on us here? And what I find helpful here was the assessment is cognitive, where we're reflecting and thinking about it. The impact is, I think, is very helpful to experience it physically in the body. So the first is the mind, the second is really maybe the body. Because the anger itself has certain physical characteristics and expressions in the body, manifestations, get hot, get tight, constricted, all the blood can go in certain directions from certain parts of the body. They say that the blood flows into the hands when people get angry so that we can better strike someone. I guess in the old days, that was a useful strategy. And so, you know, sometimes to the head, all kinds of things, you know. So what's the physical impact of anger on you? And then if there's underlying or other emotions that are part of this complex, like fear, where is that felt in the body? And this is where the basic mindfulness practice is so helpful, because the most basic aspect of mindfulness is to not evaluate, not be involved in the cognitive thinking about things, but just stop and just have very simple awareness where we allow the emotion to be there and to feel it. And it's one of the, especially like in meditation, meditation is like a really special place to be emotional. I think it's like one of the best places to be emotional on the planet, you know, as it's for all kinds of emotions, because it's safe. especially like something like anger. There's no need when you meditate to suppress anger. There's no need to judge it negatively. There's no need to judge it at all. There's no need to figure it out. There's no need, you know. And so you can just let the rage, you know, just rage through, because you're committed for the duration of meditation to sit still. You're not going to punch the person out. You're not going to say something you shouldn't say. You sit there. And so you give freedom to it, and I think it's very respectful to give freedom to it, provided we don't get involved cognitively in it. We don't get involved in the stories. Because we keep retelling the stories, which means, in the language I used earlier, we keep assessing it, keep evaluating it, keep telling the stories over and over again. Then it's like putting gasoline on the fire. So learning the art of mindfulness is to learn how to be present for something without telling stories, without judging, without criticizing. It's this basic, simple ability to be aware and nothing else. So when we can be mindful that way in meditation for anger and rage, then it can flow and move through us freely. And why that's helpful is that our inner life, our physical inner life, has a lot of, I like to call it wisdom. It has a way of processing these things. It has a way of discharging, emptying, transforming, moving things through in helpful ways. If we get out of the way, and I've seen over and over again emotions like anger and fear, sadness and grief, when we respect them and allow them to be there in a simple, ordinary way, feel them in our body, feel the impact on our body, and make space for them to kind of do what they need to do, they tend to move towards equilibrium, they tend to move towards health. And so some people will protest that it feels wrong to give free rein to anger in meditation because they have all kinds of ideas that anger is wrong or bad. In Buddhism, there's no emotions which is wrong to have when you meditate. It only can be harmful if you fuel it. But if you don't fuel it with stories and more desire, but just kind of feel it and be with it, it's remarkable what can happen. So, for example, there might be anger, and so you feel the anger as a lot of heat and contraction in the belly, perhaps. And so you go feel the belly that's so hot and so angry. And so you allow, just feel it. Let it to be there. Bring your attention. Give it permission to be there. It might be uncomfortable, but through mindfulness we learn how to be okay with discomfort. So we can just feel and be present with it. And then kind of giving space to these emotions in our body, as how they feel physically, is kind of like giving breathing room for it to kind of unwind or unfold, evolve, do what it needs to do. And so maybe the anger begins to dissipate. That's one direction it could go, soften. And in the cracks of the anger, we see fear. And the fear might be felt as a constriction, a heaviness in the chest. And so then the task is to do the same thing with that. And the image I like is that of cupping your hands together, gently, lovingly, and come from underneath and hold the fear like you would hold like something very careful and tender. You have your awareness be like that. And then you might feel the fear for a while. Give permission for the fear to be there. And then, no story. Just you've done the story. You've done the evaluation before, maybe another time. Just be present. Very simple presence. Very patient. Breathe with it. And then the fear might begin to shift and change. And in the cracks of the fear, you see that there's a feeling of being insecure. A little different than fear. Just a little feeling insecure. And it feels more tender. So you bring and feel that carefully. And then with time, in the cracks of the fear, you see that there's a desire for safety. And a desire for safety is a nice thing to have. I think it's ordinary, basic human instinct. And if you come down to there, to the desire for safety, then perhaps it's closely connected to love, caring for yourself, having care, compassion, well-being for yourself. And then you can make, at that point, it might be a time to go back up into your evaluation and consider, now given that, that's what I want to be safe, what is the wisest way to approach this? And you might make a very different decision coming from that source inside of you than if you came from the rage that it all started with. So this ability, the mindful ability to feel the impact and give yourself time, stop and look, stop and be aware, stop and feel, without any suppression, resistance, without any impatience, just let it be, and let your inner life take its time to unwind the way it needs to unwind, or do what it needs to do. It's a very, very, I think, respectful thing for ourselves, for our inner life to do. So first there's assessment, then there's being present for the impact, and then there's the response. And the response, we come back to the world of cognition, to the world, the cognitive world of thinking, reflection, contemplation. Because if we don't take time to actively reflect and think about what a good response is to a situation that's invoked anger, and you say, well, I don't want to reflect, you know, or something, it takes too much work, your mind's doing the reflection for you anyway. And who do you want to have in charge? You or the reptilian brain? So to do some, so then to spend some time considering what the response can be instead of what the reaction would be. And that's one of the advantages of stop and look, that then there's a chance to not react, to pause before we react impulsively, and then to have time to reflect. What's the wise way to respond to the situation? And I think a nice rule, or I don't know, kind of a policy, I don't know what to call it, a nice suggestion, I wouldn't say it has to be this way, but a nice suggestion, is any time that anger has been evoked, it's a sign that something needs attention. It's actually, see it as you can actually see anger, the evoking of anger, as a good thing in and of itself, because an indication that something needs your attention, something needs deeper looking at. And that something needs a response. To just simply turn our back on the situation, ignore it, suppress it, underexpress it, can be harmful. I've seen that at times in my life where I was going to be a good Buddhist practitioner, just let go and not react, just let go and kind of pretend I wasn't angry, or believe I wasn't angry, not pretend, believe I wasn't angry. That the pressure would build, and I remember many years ago, other people could tell, Gil, you're so angry, no, I'm not, and then sometimes it lends itself to being explosive, it builds that way. So rather than kind of turning away from it. kind of a good suggestion or a good kind of policy is, if you get angry, it means something is needed, some response is needed. And the question is, where is that response needed? Sometimes it's needed in the world, some kind of response. Maybe not blame, maybe not hostility, but maybe sit down with someone and have a conversation. Sometimes what's needed is a strong no. No, I'm not going to do that. Oh, you can't do that. Very clear, no. Setting boundaries. Sometimes you can say no without hostility. Just no. Or maybe sometimes what's needed is nothing in the world out there, because after you've done your inner practice and looked at it all, you realize that the 99.999% of where it's really the issue is in yourself. And so you really need to kind of spend some time with yourself and really get to the roots of what's happening in some deeper way. But I think that anger is something that should be respected a lot. Our society gives many people good cause to be angry. Whether it's justified, exactly, I think probably we should consider it justified. There's tremendous injustice that goes on in our society. There are people who are, treated really badly and poorly and suppressed in our societies in many ways. And one of the very sad things is that when the people who are subjugated and or receive the butt of prejudice, when they get angry, they're blamed for being the problem. Many social situations, this idea of blaming the person who is the victim because they get angry. You're not supposed to be angry. I think that part of the reason why this current Republican presidential candidate is being so successful is because he's expressing anger. And that anger is very, very evocative and powerful for some people to approve of and get behind. And when the current Democratic presidential candidate has anything that looks like being angry, maybe because she's a woman, somehow she's not supposed to be that way. So this idea that our society is very unkind and very, about this whole idea of anger. So I think that for all of us to be respectful of it, when other people are angry, to be respectful of it. Not so much, doesn't mean we approve it. We might strongly disapprove of it in some situations, but to be respectful of it means the word Latin meaning for respect means to look again. Respect, to stop and look. And I think that even if you're horrified by some of the things going on in our society under the name of anger or through the vehicle of anger, I think it's always a good sign, time, to stop and look. What's really going on? What's the assessment? And when it's a social situation, it takes more of a social assessment. What's the impact? What's the impact on us? What's the impact on them? What's the real, visceral, immediate impact of it? And how can we be with it and be present for it? The way I described it earlier about being present for the impact on us and learning that ability, the powerful ability to have this, hold something in awareness without reacting and judging, is a tremendous gift to the world itself, to other people, to have the ability to offer that to others. I've offered that to people who've been angry, and I think it was a gift. There are people who have never had the experience of being angry, and the person that they were angry with just held it, made space for it, and didn't respond or react. And I've had people come back to me and said, "Gil, I'll tell you a story. I've told this before." So I was teaching a retreat many years ago, 20 years ago, and I'd set up a time to have an interview with a person. But I was also giving the Dharma talk that evening. So I was busy preparing my talk, and I forgot about the meeting. Now, this was a person on a meditation retreat. Nothing happens on retreats. You sit and you walk, you're silent, and there's lots of time, and we could have easily set up another time, but I missed interviews. As soon as I realized I missed it, I went to find her to apologize and set up another time. She was furious. Absolutely furious. So I said, "Okay, I guess we should sit down and talk." And so we went back to this room and sat down. And I sat this way, cross-legged on the floor. And I don't know if she was sitting that way too, or sitting in a chair. I don't know what it was going, but anyway, sitting opposite each other. And she proceeded to be angry at me. I mean, not just angry, but like furious, kind of almost yelling at me for an hour. And I just got more and more curious. I said, "This is really something. This is an opportunity for me. This is what's this about? What's it like for me? And sit here. I'll just sit here. And like, what happens to me? How do I be with this?" It was a great practice opportunity for me. It's like learn how to be present for anger and not get caught in it. And I was curious about her. How long can a person go on with a monologue? Anger. I was kind of fascinated, but then after an hour, the dinner bell rang. So we have a saying in Buddhism: "Saved by the bell." So so I said, oh, I have to go. And and that seemed reasonable to her, so we left. So that was it. So the next day she came back to me and said, Gil, that was so helpful for me. In the past, everyone just runs away from me when I'm angry. And I think she got to see herself in a new way. She got to experience herself and really kind of take ownership of her anger in a way that she couldn't before when people had other responses to her. So I've been down other situations like that where I feel like it's been a little bit of a gift that I've had, that to be able to offer my, you know, a safe person to people to be angry with. Then all of us can sit and be with it and find a more wise response. So to assess the assessment, the impact, and the response. To reflect on the assessment, the evaluation. To feel and be mindful of the impact. And then to be wise about the response to anger. And what I didn't do today that I was hoping to do a better job at was to say more about the distinction between anger and hostility. But I just want to emphasize that it's the ending, that this is really important to tease apart those two. And because whereas anger might have its place in our society, it might have its role in our lives sometimes, I would like to believe that hostility never does. And that we want to be able to come with a response, ultimately, respectful, open to the whole gamut of life. And in that respect, be able to have come from a place of compassion and caring for all beings. May our practice, practicing with anger, stopping and looking at anger, be for the safety, happiness, and well-being of all beings without exception. Thank you.